Okay, so we are less than a week away from Purim, and many years Purim falls around Parsha Tetzaveh, which is the Parsha that discusses the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. So I figured we would talk about something related to costumes as it relates to the Kohen Gadol, and also as it relates to Purim. So we'll split our time between those two. Feel free to share any thoughts as we jump in. So the beginning of our discussion is from this week's Parsha, in source number one. And it's the commandment for Aharon to wear his special garments. Aharon was the Kohen Gadol, he was the high priest at the time. Him and his sons, whenever they would come into the tent of meeting, the Ohel, the Mishkan, however you want to call it, in order that they not bear iniquity and die, it shall be a perpetual statute for him and for his descendants after him. So it appears from the simple kind of presentation of this discussion that the issue is twofold. The issue is, number one, wearing a certain kind of garment or certain kind of clothing while in process of the various parts of working in the Mishkan, or whatever they were. Let's say it was a korban, a sacrifice, or lighting the menorah, or whatever they were involved in, they had to be wearing a certain kind of garment. And then there was a second issue of doing those activities while not wearing the clothing. So those are kind of both at the same time. You have to be wearing them in order to do the service, and if you're not wearing them, that's also a big problem. And that's what Rashi points out when it says "and die" in the pasuk. It's while lacking the proper garments, one is liable to death by the hands of heaven. So it's a very serious thing to wear this specific type of garment. And as we know from the text itself and the narrative, we have eight unique pieces of clothing the Kohen Gadol would wear. And then the regular Kohanim, the regular priests, would only be obligated in four out of the eight. So the Kohen Gadol doesn't have eight distinct. There are four that everybody wears, and there's an extra four that the Kohen Gadol would wear that are not worn by others. There's another point that's made, which is that the clothing, the Gemara points this out, the clothing acts, has a similar power or impact as a sacrifice itself. In other words, the way sacrifices are able to atone for sins, let's say, for example, the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, actually each article of clothing would atone for a different type of sin that would be related to that part of the body or that it was covering or that it was part of.
So if the Kohen Gadol did a korban, tried to bring a korban without all of these clothes, then not only would he die, the korban also wouldn't work?
Presumably. Okay. Presumably, yeah. That would make sense. And that seems like something that is probably pretty explicit. So what is the purpose of these clothing? What is the goal of these clothing? So the way that the Torah describes them is that the purpose of the clothing is l'chavod u'l'tifaret. For honor and for splendor. So there's different commentaries that talk about what does it mean for honor and for splendor. In source number two, the Ramban explains that the idea of honor and splendor is that the clothing is supposed to have a relationship to royal garments. It's supposed to give off a certain feeling of royalty, honor, glorious clothing, and the Ramban here quotes a pasuk from Isaiah, from Yeshayahu, as a groom who ministers in glory, right? As these clothes were the clothes of royalty, right? So their likeness was worn by kings during the time of the Torah. So kavod and tiferet, these two words that the Torah uses to talk about the nature of the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, it's really to honor God. It's to honor God in the Beit HaMikdash. A different commentary, the Sforno, I didn't put it here on the page, the Sforno says that kavod and tiferet are accomplishing two different goals, meaning the clothing that he wears, on the one hand, accomplishes a certain, what you might call, bein adam l'makom, between man and God, and that's honor for Hashem, that the clothing is a representative of God here on earth for the Jewish people, and Tiferet is vis-a-vis the people themselves. Ben Adam, you know, l'chaveiro, if you want to call it that, that the Kohen Gadol is supposed to garner a certain level of respect from the people, and the clothing that he wears will bring on that respect, that people will look at him and look up to him. The Sefer Achinuch, similar kind of line of thinking in source number 3, talks about how the goal of these clothing is actually for the Kohen Gadol to look down at the clothing and to see each garment and have the garments remind him what his role is. You look in the source number 3, he says, Hayasora kavua lanu ki adam nifal ofi pulotav, achdei machshvotav, kavanotav. You're going to be influenced, and it's going to lead you to action based on your thoughts, based on your emotions. Vashaliach mechaper, the agent who is atoning for the people, tzarichli payes kol machshvotav kavanotol avoda. He has to be completely absorbed and consumed by the experience of the service of the mikdash, whatever he's involved in. Malkein ra'u l'bosh begadim yuchadim eleha. So that's why he wears certain clothing that will allow him to impact, that will allow the clothing to impact his thoughts, to impact what he's actually intending when he does the avodah. Anywhere he looks in his body, he's going to see a different element of what he's supposed to be thinking about. For sure, a general kind of recognition, you know, as many shuls have on top of the parocha, dalif ne'miya ta'omei, know before whom you stand. The clothing is supposed to emanate or remind the Kohen Gadol of that notion as well. And he gives an example, zekein tefillin, right? The idea of tefillin, when it's on a person's body, shinsavua kol anich b'ktzar aguf, and it's at a point where a person sees it, she has zikaron machshavar hakasher, that it will remind the person, okay, the tefillin's on your head, the head is a place of your intellect, of your thoughts, and that's something that if you see the tefillin, you'll be reminded what are you supposed to be thinking about, especially when you're wearing tefillin. Kohen Gadol also wore tefillin, that he needed extra kavana for other things, extra intent for other things that he was involved in. One last thought about the kind of the nature of the clothing, what the clothing was supposed to do, is I didn't put it here on the sheet either, but the Ketav Sofer writes that, you know, this notion that the Torah is commanding a certain type of dress, a certain type of costume, a certain type of garment for the Kohen Gadol, that's something that reflects for us the message about how we dress in general. But the idea of the idea of a levush, right? The Shulchan Aruch has a lot of discussion about the way we dress for tefillah and all this. We'll come back to an interesting question later about, you know, costumes and davening and costumes on Purim. We'll try to discuss that a little bit later. But he says this is a certain, it gives off a certain image, a certain message about how the way that we dress or the way that we portray ourselves as Jewish people, trying to have a certain, either whether it's you're proud of being Jewish, or whether it's a distinct type of Jewish dress, whether it's Shabbat or Yom Tov or something of that nature, those are things that we should think about as kind of a corollary or an outcome, consequence of thinking about the idea of the dress of the Kohen Gadol. The Ketav Sofer quotes the Midrash about the Jewish people when they were Mitzrayim. We spoke about it a number of weeks back. That they, one of the things they didn't change, I think this was not in the Midrash that we quoted, but one of the things that the Jewish people didn't alter when they were Mitzrayim was their clothing, right? And the clothing was distinct. For the Kohen Gadol, he always kind of knew what his role was, so for him it was much more about gaining the respect. So those are a few thoughts, initial thoughts about Kavod and Tifaret and the goal of the Big Day Kuhuna in general. If you look in source 4 and 5, it's an interesting debate already among the commentaries whether this idea of Kavod and Tifaret applies to all 8 of the clothing, and there's even a debate here in the Rishonim whether the idea of a Kohen having to wear certain types of clothing is a mitzvah altogether. The other way to look at it, in source number 5, the Ramban quotes the Bahag, the Baal Halachot Gedolot, that maybe the whole idea of the clothing of the Kohen Gadol was not a mitzvah in and of itself, but it was a preparation for a mitzvah. What halacha calls a hechsher mitzvah, the way that we prepare to be able to perform a mitzvah, and in this case the mitzvah was whatever the service that the Kohen Gadol was performing in the Mishkan, in the Beit HaMikdash, that was the goal, the purpose of the clothing was to get him in that frame of mind. So the Rambam assumes that the Bigdei Kuna, the special garments that the Kohen Gadol wears, it's a mitzvah to wear the clothing themselves, and the Rambam takes it on face value, even though only 6 out of the 8 are spoken about in this week's parasha. All 8 are incorporated in the mitzvah itself, so the Kohen Gadol needs to be wearing all 8 in order to fulfill the mitzvah, special mitzvah of wearing these garments. And others argue on this. Some say, you know, one of the 8 garments are called the michnasayim, which are basically pants. And some of the Rishonim say the purpose of the pants was not to have a special garment called pants. It was just he needed to cover up that part of his body. It's more of a tzniut, you know, modesty issue than it is something special. Others argued. Another example is the tzitz. Tzitz is the metal crown, not even a crown, kind of like a
headband.
That's a good way to describe it. A headband. Headband's not really an article of clothing. You could argue, you could debate that one, but that's what some wanted to argue. You can't really count it as one of the 8. Anyway, these are just smaller, minor points to make as an idea. And the Ramban in number 5 also he brings about halachot gedolot. So some argued and some said, you know, the whole idea of the clothing was just to get the Kohen Gadol ready to be able to do the service, whereas the Rambam took it at face value that Hashem was commanding the Kohen Gadol. The Ramban also points out that maybe you could say that. According to the Rambam, you'd have to really have 3 mitzvot. There's a mitzvah for the Kohen Gadol, then there's the regular Kohanim, who have to wear a different type of garments, and then there's Yom Kippur, which has its own set of garments as well. So, a little bit of back and forth on this. I want to move on to the next piece. Any questions so far? Comments? Okay. So, I call this law and lore. So, we're going to look at a story which is related to the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, a very interesting story from the Gemara Masechet Shabbat. So this is actually the third part of a series of stories of potential converts who came to Hillel and Shammai to inquire about becoming Jewish. In the first 2 stories, more commonly quoted stories, I would say, the first one is where the potential convert comes before Shammai and asks him, how many Torahs are there? And Shammai says, there are 2 Torahs, the written Torah and the oral Torah. So he basically says, I accept the written Torah, but I don't accept the oral Torah. So Shammai doesn't want to accept him, and then Hillel ends up accepting him based on that comment, even though he seems to be unwilling to accept the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral Torah. And the next day he's teaching him the Aleph Bet, and he says, Aleph Bet Gimel Dalet, he makes him repeat it back, and then the next day he reverses it. So he reverses it, he says, Dalet Gimel Bet Aleph. So the guy says, but yesterday you told me the other way. So Hillel says to him, just like you relied on me yesterday to teach you the proper direction, that's how Torah Shebaal Peh works. You have to rely on the transmission of tradition. That was story number 1. Story number 2.
It's the famous one.
Is the famous one, comes to Shammai and he says, can you teach me the whole Torah while I stand on 1 foot? Al regel achat. So Shammai doesn't think this is a normal way to convert, to come into the Jewish fold. He throws him out and he goes to Hillel and Hillel says, no problem, right? And then the famous line, what is hateful to you, do not do unto others. That's al regel achat. That's the whole Torah on 1 foot. And everything else is commentary. So we're not here to analyze those 2. Those are very interesting stories to look at. We're looking at the 3rd one. So here it is in source number 6. There was another incident involving one Gentile who was passing behind the study hall and heard the voice of a teacher who was teaching Torah to students and saying the verse, these are the garments that they shall make, from this week's Parsha, a breastplate, an ephod, and a robe, and a tunic of checker work, a mitre, and a girdle. By the way, the bold words are the ones that are actually in the Gemara. The ones that are not bold are the fill-in of this wonderful new translation on Sepharia. The Gentile said, these garments, for whom are they designated? So the student said to him, for the high priest, for the Kohen Gadol. So the Gentile said to himself, I will go and convert so that they will install me as high priest. So he comes before Shammai and says to him, convert me on condition that you install me as the Kohen Gadol. It sounds like a really nice thing for this guy. He wants to wear this clothing. He wants to get all the honor. So Shammai pushed him out and he said, you know, that's impossible. That's not something that we will ever accept as a claim to want to join the Jewish people. So he came before Hillel. Hillel converted him. So Hillel said to him, to the convert, is it not the way of the world that only one who knows the protocols of royalty is appointed king? Go and learn the royal protocols by engaging in Torah study. So he went and he read the Bible. When he reached the verse which says, and the common man that draws near shall be put to death, right? That's in Bamidbar chapter 1. The convert said to Hillel, who's this talking about, right? So Hillel said to him, even with regard to David, king of Israel, which David Melech Yisrael, was not a Kohen, the convert reasoned in Kal Vachomer, inference himself, that's a Kal Vachomer argument. If the Jewish people are called God's children, and due to the love that God loved them, he called them Israel's my son, my firstborn, nevertheless, it's written about them, not everybody has access to be able to become a Kohen. That's called a czar. A czar is a non-Kohen. Common man that draws near shall be put to death. You're not allowed, not every regular person off the street can just go into the Beit HaMikdash and do the service of the Beit HaMikdash. A mere convert who came without merit with nothing more than his staff and traveling about all the more so that this applies to him as well. So he was saying about himself, realizing that even me, right, if David HaMelech can't become a Kohen to do the service in the Beit HaMikdash, then for sure I cannot either. So the convert came before Shammai. He told him he retracts his demand. He realizes he was mistaken. Thanks to Hillel, right? And he says, am I at all worthy to be the high priest? He says, that's not, right? It's not written in the Torah, and the common man that draws near shall be put to death. Then he comes to Hillel and he says, Hillel, the patient, may blessings rest upon your head as you brought me under the wings of the divine presence. I didn't put the postscript of the stories that the three converts meet up. The three converts meet up at the end and they're all talking to each other and they say, you know, thanks to the strictness of Shammai, we were pushed away. Thanks to the humility of Hillel, the patience and tolerance of Hillel, we were brought in. So this story is an interesting story in and of itself. Also, there are obviously other agadot that I could have chosen that are related to the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. Some other famous ones, actually. But this is the one I chose, and it brings out an interesting point about the idea of the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. Or the idea of wanting to become the Kohen Gadol. And when Rav Kook writes here in his Perush, in Source 7, his Perush on the Agadah, the first thing he points out on the right side is that let's objectively look at the actions of this individual, right? The actions of this guy, he's coming forward, he overhears the Talmidim, the students studying in yeshiva, and they're learning Parsha Tetzaveh, they're learning this week's Parsha, right? They're learning about the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. And he's motivated all of a sudden to want to convert. It's like a wild concept, right? So let's try to analyze his motivation. So here's what Rav Kook writes on the right side. I'm in the third line. Lifamim tzarich lakir kochi toron ba'adam. We have to look, try to understand the positive potential that's within a person. Right? Bishvil shemifanelo vavol, tov ha'emet. You see a person, maybe on the outside, maybe externally, they don't come off as someone who might be interested or someone who might have a motivation towards something good or something positive. Afal pi, she'enu motzed ha'emet mipnei sibot ha'mona'ot, v'al ratzon ha'mi dilei b'lev lidrosh et ha'tov gam u'davar tov v'nichbad. If you question them, you speak to them, you try to get to know them a little better, you might uncover and discover that really deep inside they have some kind of, positive motivation towards something. He says, "Lo kain hu lichora adam shemitzad ezem mikresi balakavom mikazet totzoni." Look at this guy! Just like all of a sudden, randomly, coincidentally, he passes by the Beit Midrash, and at that moment they're studying about the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, and at that moment he has this idea. And look what he writes: he says, "This guy wasn't like, spiritually, I really want to become the Kohen Gadol." You think that was really what was on his mind? Ki mikra, it's just happenstance, he's the main shavar chwe berik nes shema kolsev. It just happened to work. Kama mikrelo tzichol amido nukudashi b'me yisuri b'amiti. Ki muvrak v'na barakit tzunishu m'shei kohen gadol. What's he interested in? He's interested in the respect. He says, this clothing kohen gadol, kavod v'tifaret. I want to have the honor and the respect that people are going to give me. They're going to see a person dressed in such clothing. That was his motivation. This Nochri, this non-Jew, so Shammai looks at him and he says, This is the reason you want to convert to Judaism? For honor, for you know, your desire just to, for people to look at you and give you respect? He says, that's not what being Jewish is. That's not a good motivation. You are not displaying pure enough intention to join the fold. So what was Hillel's argument? Because Hillel accepted him. It's very hard to understand. What was Hillel thinking? What was going on? What's going through Hillel's mind when he encountered this individual? And the individual told him the story. So this is what happened to me. So Hillel thinks to himself and he says, and this is really Rav Kook's point here. I'm not going to read the piece inside, but we'll read the first few lines, not the whole thing. Hillel looks at him and he says, something else going on here. He says, nothing happens in life that's random. Nothing. There's no coincidences. So if this experience happened to this individual, that very moment, that's when he was passing by the yeshiva, he heard that exact line. And he says, maybe externally we have to say the guy was impure motivation. But dig and try to understand that if he was passing by at this moment and he had that feeling inside, that's a spark. You have to respect that. You have to appreciate that. You have to look at that and say, maybe this spark can turn into a fire and turn into something greater. That was Hillel's greatness. Hillel was able to see within people, see beyond externals, and see within the people something that was even greater. And he writes, if you look in the fourth line, Ein safik b'davar she'ein shum mikre she'ein lo erech ra'ui libonanut. You have to It could be that you'll understand a certain moment in time as not necessarily coincidental, but not necessarily of having great significance. Meaning, just because everything is orchestrated in some way, doesn't mean that every single moment of life has major significance. But at least we have to look into it. That's his point. And he looks into it and he says, how could it be that this guy, at that exact moment in time, at that exact moment in history, this person with that age and that stage of his life, walked by this yeshiva and heard that specific idea being spoken about? He says, it can't be that there isn't something else going on here. He's mistaken, because he thinks the reason why he heard it, you know, is in order to be able to become the Kohen Gadol. It couldn't be, says Rav Kook, that he would have gone to this moment if he didn't have desire for just something greater, something bigger than himself, something more meaningful in life. He channeled in the wrong way. And Hillel said, okay, but I have something to work with. Here I have something to work with. So this story is interesting because it also relates to the fact that at the end of the day, it's important to realize that the costume and the idea of the external is only going to be, you know, meaningful when the internal has you know, kind of a grounding in the right form. That's a little bit on the clothing of Kohen Gadol. And the idea of dress, one idea at least on the idea of dress in general. So let's talk about Purim as a particular focus, as we are quickly arriving to that day. So there are a number of ideas quoted why we wear costumes on Purim. One of the more oft-quoted, especially in the halachic literature, is based on the pasuk in source number 8. This is Esther chapter 8, right at the end of the whole story of the Megillah. Mordechai leaves the king's presence, bilvush malchut, right? And he's wearing levush malchut, and he's dressed up, blue and white, a huge golden crown, a wrap of linen and purple, right? Va'ir Shushan shouted and rejoiced. So the Rama in Shulchan Aruch brings down the custom to wear to wear costumes. And he quotes this here, Mashanagu Lilbosh Partsufim Bepurim. Right? Partsufim Bepurim. Costumes or masks on Purim. There's this minhag, and if you look in the Eliyahu Rabbah, the third line down there in source number 9, he says it comes from the fact that Mordechai dressed up. Now, in general, by the way, the whole Purim story is really a lot of this idea of clothing and the externals and the costumes, and you know, it's not just Mordechai who dressed up. We have other examples as well. But that's one idea quoted. Just interesting, the Ramah also quotes here the custom of cross-dressing. So just a little bit on that. There is a Torah prohibition against cross-dressing, a man dressing up as a woman dressing up as a man. And he quotes it here as something that is permitted. Eini sur b'davar, if you look at the end of the first line in source number 9, Eini sur b'davar, me'achar she'im mechavnin el simcha ba'alma. The whole reason why people are cross-dressing is to enhance the joy of Purim itself. The Ramah is basing himself on an earlier commentary, Rabbi Yehuda Mintz from the 15th century. Rabbi Yehuda Mintz talks about a widespread custom for people to cross-dress. Sounds like he was talking about it in general, which is just interesting because
where is this?
It's in the Rav Yehuda Mintz. I can send you the exact source if you want to see it. It's from the 15th century, and he says that cross-dressing is only a problem if the reason why you're doing it is for beautification. So he's kind of giving a limitation on when it's not permitted, prohibited. And the Ramah uses this as the source. So if it's for simcha, it would be allowed. Now it should just be noted that not everybody agrees with this. The Bach argues, and the Mishnah Berurah seems to side with this approach, that the whole reason why the person's cross-dressing in Purim is really to look like the other gender, and that isn't necessarily under the framework of what the Ramah meant when he allowed it. So, different opinions on that. If you're planning on this type of costume for Purim, speak to your local Orthodox rabbi on that one. The Ramah also mentions the wearing kilayim on a derabanan kilayim. Kilayim is a forbidden mixture, right? A shatnez, a forbidden mixture, which really the Torah doesn't allow this. But there is a Mishnah that talks about evading taxes, which is not a good thing to talk about this time of year. But there is this discussion. I'm not going to get too much into it now, but the Ramah does talk about it. I want to mention a few more ideas. Source number 10 is a commentary on the Megillah, modern commentary from the 20th century, Yoel Schwartz, who has written over 200 Sfarim. On basically every topic. He's still alive. He's in Israel somewhere. And he writes that the goal of costumes is actually to help Matanos Levyonim. Based on the Megillah, Matana is something that you do with honor. So if somebody is really in need of money for tzedakah, for Matanos Levyonim, then the best way to give it to them is in a disguise, right? So he says the whole idea of the costume is so that you can accomplish this mitzvah, matana levyonim, in order not to embarrass the person. If you're wearing a costume, they don't know who you are. You might know who they are, but they don't know who you are, and it takes away some of the shame of having to ask for tzedakah from those individuals. Just another interesting idea of where costumes, whether developed from or some reasons why they might be a good idea to wear on Purim, to be unrecognizable. The O of Yisrael, kind of a little bit of a different direction. He talks about how the whole idea of the Purim costume is kind of a reflection of the v'nafochu nature of Purim, that when you do something different, right, you're kind of changing the regular way that you dress, that can help enhance the simcha of Purim. He talks about it here in source number 11. He says, Most people will look at this and say, you're going to notice it. People are going to notice it, and it can create, you know, a joy or a kind of a joking atmosphere. He's quoting here on this, or non-Jewish clothing or cross-dressing. You see people in their regular clothes, it doesn't necessarily cause people to laugh or cause people to have joy, but when you see people doing something different, it can create a sense of simcha. Omnam ikar simcha ba machmad hishtanu midavar lehipucho. That's the idea of, you know, I guess he's really kind of explaining the reason why cross-dressing creates is because it's an opposite, right? It's literally the opposite feature of the way a person usually looks. That creates the shock, which creates the laughter and the joy. Kind of the psychological development of how laughter comes about. That's exactly what the Purim miracle was all about. It was about the flip, the change, the transition from, you know, from being on the bottom to being on the top. Right, the lot of Haman became our lot and became our victory. The Shevet Alevi, who was also a modern posek, talks about wearing a Purim costume while you pray on the day of Purim. Is there a problem with wearing? Right, with wearing, it is actually a very funny opening line. We'll read it. He was asked a question. He says, "Harbe nohagim betachposet Purim." Many people wear it. Hachlafat begadim, not cross dressing in the male female cross dressing, but a kigon litaim shrimal. Right, a person who usually is a litvish dress, and now, or maybe they're wearing a black hat, and now instead of a black hat, they're wearing a shrimal. So that's also a form of cross-dressing, which will create that effect. Ola hefech, imutar li palel, bazet tfilat mincha marv. It's a pretty conservative costume to daven in on Purim. But nonetheless, that was the question that he asked, and he seems to indicate a kind of a general rule of how to think whether your costume is appropriate to daven in when you're on the day of Purim. He says, "Al piyam avor orachaim shetzarich kederach shomei lifnei anashim chashuvim." Right? You have this comment about tefillah is supposed to be standing in front of the king, and how do you dress when you greet the king? You greet the president. I like this line because it just connects back to some of the ideas we said. He says, in my opinion, the external is not what establishes it. The person comes and maybe he's wearing a crazy costume, but they're davening with kavana, and that seems to be their again, this is one approach. There are probably others who would maybe argue with this, but if they show seriousness toward the tefillah, even if their costume isn't necessarily the most serious type of costume, I think within reason, that would be fine. Often I'm dol lifnei Hashem yiparach b'tefillah diyachshov ki ilu shchina kenegdo v'omer lifnei melech malchei malchim. You're covered. You're not. You know, your parts of your body that are supposed to be covered for tefillah are covered. As long as you follow the main rules of tefillah, he seems to think that it's okay. And I think that line about, you know, what's on the inside and what's on the internal, I think, is a very important kind of message which we've developed here. There's another kind of hashkafic point that I want to conclude with here, which is the Gemara Masechet Chulin, which asks about Esther min haTorah minayin, right? Where is the hint to Esther from the Torah? And the Gemara answers Hastera stira panai, right? That Hashem will surely hide His face. This is from the end of the book of Dvarim, and it's the foreshadowing of moments in history where God's face will be hidden. God is always there, but we won't necessarily see it as clearly. And that, of course, is a very strong reference to the Purim story itself, where Hashem is working from behind the scenes, and then at the end, we have this revealing, in a way, and that's what Rabbi Akiva Tatz mentions here in source 14, but I want to conclude with the Pachad Yitzchak. And Pachad Yitzchak is discussing the Gemara in Megillah, which asks the question, if Purim, which is really in a way a greater miracle than when we left Egypt. When we left Egypt, we went from slavery to freedom. Purim, we went from death to life. So on Pesach, we have a Shira, we have a Hallel, we have a praise. On Purim, we should also have a Hallel. So Gemara says three answers why we don't say Hallel on Purim. One answer is because the miracle took place outside of Israel, and don't compare it to Pesach, because the story of Pesach happened before the Jewish people entered the land of Israel as a nation. So one reason we don't say Hallel is because we don't say Hallel on miracles that happen outside of Israel. I'll do the third answer second. Third answer is because at the end of the Pesach story, we were free to serve Hashem. And at the end of the Purim story, we were still under a sovereign. We were still kind of connected to Ahasuerus. So we couldn't be fully free, we can't fully sing, we can't have a Hallel. Second answer is, we do say Hallel on Purim, or we kind of say Hallel on Purim. What is the Hallel that we say on Purim? Not the Hallel that we're used to, page 632 in the Art Scroll Siddur, but the Hallel of the Megillah. The Megillah itself is a form of Hallel. So Rav Huttner analyzes this very beautifully. He says, Kusha de Gemara, Amai ein Omrim Hallel Purim. Teretz de Gemara, Kriyata Zu Elil. That's one of the answers. That the reading of the Megillah is a form of Hallel. Dehainu Shai Yedei Kriyata Megillah, Yotzim Yedei Chovar Amirat Hillel. So he brings a Me'iri. It's an interesting comment from the Me'iri. The Me'iri asks a question. He says, what would happen if you came Purim 1 year and you didn't have a Megillah? And you had no way to read the story out of Megillah? You know what you have to do if you didn't have a Megillah? You'd have to read Hallel instead. And you know why that works? Because the Gemara says, on Purim, we say Hallel. What's our Hallel? It's the Megillah. So theoretically, if you didn't have a Megillah, maybe you could say Hallel. You don't follow this halacha, but this is an interesting suggestion. And he wants to just analyze this as a message about Purim. And here's the parting idea for today's discussion. It's not a majority opinion. No one talks about saying Hallel on Purim. But let's try to analyze it for a minute. What comes out? What happens? Only through reading the Megillah can you actually fulfill Hallel. So how could you say that if you don't have a Megillah, you could actually fulfill Hallel? The whole point of the Megillah is that you need the story of Purim to appreciate the praise that we're giving on Purim. So here's the message. We have to analyze what kind of miracle was the miracle of Purim. The type of Hallel that we do on that holiday is going to be a reflection of the type of miracle that took place. If the miracle is a public, revealed, awesome miracle like splitting of the sea or like the 10 plagues, then the Hallel that we're going to do is going to be a loud singing Hallel. Right? Shall Hallel Galu? Aval b'neis nistar. If we're talking about a hidden miracle like Esther, like the Megillat Esther, Esther mina Torah mina 9, it's a time of history when God's face is hidden. As a mirror to Hallel, ya mirror be kasya shall Hallel Ganus. Then the kind of Hallel that we're going to say is going to be a Hallel that's a hidden Hallel. It's a kind of a silent Hallel. Kriyata Zu'elila. Where is the Hallel of Purim? It's built in to the reading of the Megillah. It's built in, it's hidden within, because the miracle of Purim is a hidden miracle. It's not saying the Megillah is in place of Hallel. Ela Megillah, he mean Hallel. The reading of the Megillah is like a form of Hallel. What form of Hallel is it? It's not the same type of Hallel that we do on Pesach. It's a form of Hallel that's a hidden form of Hallel. Dainu Hallel Tamun mibifnim mitoch kriya megaleh mibachutz. V'asher al kein imu anus kriyat megillah arei anus kamal alel. It's a beautiful thought because it brings home the idea that in so many ways Purim, the nature of Purim is supposed to cause us to think about miracles in different ways. And I think that you know, if Purim is a paradigm for us to learn from, we should learn something from every holiday and from every experience that we have. Purim is a day, Purim is a holiday that allows us to realize that sometimes the greatest miracles are the ones that are going on, not right in front of our eyes, not necessarily right, you know, right that we can see, but the miracles that are happening all behind the scenes. So Shubizoche, this Purim should also be an opportunity to reconnect to that idea of Nisim Nistarim, and Bayamim Mehem Bezmanazeh, we should be Zochet to Nisim that happened in those days, that happened again in our days as well.